It's time for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug DeFeller.
And here we go again with another year. Welcome to 2014, our first episode of the year and the start of our six-year broadcasting radio shows. Thank you, OC Talk Radio, for being there to support us and help us bring these exciting new guests to our radio audience. Well, today's no exception. Our topic for today is fix them or fire them. If that didn't get your attention, then, hey, you've had too much eggnog. Anyhow, we have author Stephen Schaar with us today, and Steve's going to be talking to us about effective methods for employee performance improvement with step-by-step instructions for managing, evaluating, and if performance improvement isn't achievable, firing those employees. But before we get to him, let me just say, if you're listening to our podcasts, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some great guests from the past. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be in the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, and HR professionals to interview. So just drop me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com, and I will get back to you. Let's see, what else? You know, it's been a year since I did this. I don't know if I remember how to do it anymore. Let me just get the commercial out of the way. You know, we have been coaching executives and business owners for 19, guess going on 20 years, under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. Helping to create more effective teams is our primary focus. We work with both existing and new management teams and project teams. And in all our cases, our goal is to increase the productivity of the team and the individual members. We also offer individual coaching from the top executive to the newest entry-level position, coaching for people who want to sharpen their business skills, communication workshops, and more and more and more. But you can find out more about that on our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Well, let's welcome our guest here today, Stephen Schaar. Stephen has an eclectic background that spans entrepreneurship, corporate management, and management consulting. He has an undergraduate degree in computer science. He has a master's in business administration. In his early career, he was a manager and technologist for IBM, Deloitte, and Accenture. As an entrepreneur, he was instrumental in founding and leading several companies in industries as diverse as technology services, distribution, security technology, and international resort development. In 2000, Inc. magazine named a company that Stephen founded and was president of as the 38th fastest growing company in America. Wow. He's the author of numerous articles, the book, The Lawyer's Guide to Building Your Practice with Referrals, which the American Bar Association published in 2013. In 2007, he founded Schaar Associates, which provides consulting, coaching, and training. His areas of specialty include marketing with focus on internet marketing, sales, leadership development, and executive coaching. And I go through that long intro just so that you're going to give more credibility to Stephen as he talks about his book, which I just finished this week and found absolutely fascinating. Stephen, welcome to The Coaching Perspective.
Thanks so much, Doug. Thank you.
Well, hey, it's great to have you with us today.
And thank you
and
very much.
We're talking to you from where? You're in Florida?
I'm in Miami, Florida, yes.
And how is it today in Miami, Florida?
Well, it's been a little bit rainy. We've avoided some of the very cold weather the rest of the country has been suffering through. But it has not exactly been postcard beautiful weather either here.
Well, we're glad to have you on the show. Glad there was no problems. Look, tell me a little bit about what you did prior to what you're doing now. You know, I've given the background. Is there more to that that would influence our audience in listening to you?
I think I've had a very, very broad perspective, Doug, just as you have as a business coach. You know, I know that, or I imagine that you've had a lot of interaction with a lot of different organizations, seen a lot of teams and a lot of managers in action. It just has always struck me that there's often a reluctance on the part of managers to do the dirty work of management. And that dirty work is, you know, working with the underperforming employees, and sometimes it doesn't end well. But, you know, would you say you've seen that in some of the work you've done, Doug?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've suffered through the pain myself as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, as a manager, and I've suffered through it with my clients. And I've got a number of clients right now that I've already recommended your book to help them suffer through it. So,
good. Very, very good. You know, the sort of the genesis of the book was that I had developed a script for terminating employees. You know, it's sort of like a joke, sort of as George Clooney and Up in the Air, that his job was to fly around and terminate employees. But I had come up with a sort of a way for my clients to terminate employees without, you know, without the stress that comes with it, and really focusing on the things that sort of undermine the process. And I guess it was suggested to me that I write this thing up as a white paper or a small book. And another client actually brought me into their corporation to train managers as sort of an advanced management seminar on dealing with underperforming employees. And you know, the book is really the result of that. It's sort of the write-up of those training sessions of how to do that, of how to really face the anger, how to face the, you know, the bad feelings that can come up, you know, from working with somebody who's facing termination.
You know, I want to get this out right in front for the audience that's listening, that my first impression on the title was, boy, this is going to be a cold-hearted approach to wielding the axe in corporate America. But I want to say that, Stephen, your book was very thoughtful, very considerate about all the things that you should do so you don't have underperforming employees. And then last resort, you kind of dealt with that terrible issue, as you put it, of firing them. So I commend you on the delicate handling of the subject.
Thank you very much. What I've always found interesting, Doug, is that there are a lot of people out there who throw up their hands and say, oh, if you've got people who aren't performing, you've got to go fire them and move on to the next people. But, you know, my response to that is that's not necessarily the financially efficient thing to do. You know, if you fire somebody, you've got to go hire somebody now. That's going to take some time. You're going to have a hole in your organization while you're hiring that person, while you're training that person, bringing them up to speed. And quite frankly, they may not work out. They may not be happy in the company, and they may leave. You know, it's a gamble that you're going to be able to turn, you know, get a new person to be very productive after you fire somebody. If all it takes is a couple of perhaps challenging and uncomfortable meetings and conversations to solve the performance problem of an employee, that's a lot less work to move the ball forward. So, you know, I'm a big advocate of really trying to change people. But at the same time, I'll also say that, you know, I've always thought about in managing clients is that there's sort of like those who are exceeding expectations, those who are meeting expectations, those who are not meeting expectations. I think effective management can move an employee one of those notches, not two. So I think that moving somebody from underperforming to a superstar is extremely rare. That's along the lines of being hit by a meteor or something like that. But you can move an employee from underperforming to performing. You can move a performing employee to exceeding expectations.
And, you know, that was a key point that I took away from the book, and I hadn't thought about it that way before, but it is so obvious. I mean, it's not that I want to give up on changing people, but we're not going to remake them to something they really never were, never are. Key point.
It's true. It's true. You know, in certain organizations, you know, like, for example, I have a history in consulting to law firms, but professional services organizations where you're really looking to nurture those superstars, it makes sense to look at, you know, the people you have, and if they're not meeting expectations, you could be pretty confident they won't become a superstar. And if you're trying to cultivate those superstars, then, you know, you need to act accordingly. But there are many businesses where, you know, you don't need superstars in a production facility. You need people who are going to show up on time every day and answer the phone and, you know, follow the procedure That's really what you're looking for. There may not be room for a superstar or desire for a superstar in every single position.
And, you know, one of the things that I sort of picked up on over and over in your book was the way in which you dealt with expectations, you know, in identifying that, you know, part of the problem is people aren't clear about our expectations from the employees, about when they're meeting them, when they're not meeting them, and maybe even what they are.
It's very true. That's every relationship.
People with a short attention span, and I'm not encouraging anybody to sign off. What are the three most important takeaways from the book that a business owner should get?
I think the most important takeaway is that accepting underperforming employees sends a very, very bad message to your organization. Your other employees will see this and, you know, they'll realize, oh, I've got nothing to worry about. You know, I don't have to work hard. If Bob over here can be that, you know, that much of a knucklehead and not get fired, I've got nothing to worry about. And of course, the reverse of that's true. And I think that companies that have embraced like up or out types of mentalities, like General Electric, most famously, it creates an environment where employees are looking over their shoulder, and that will give you more effective output. You know, there's really no question about that. I think the second thing that's worth addressing or thinking about is that, you know, no employee comes to work thinking that they're a poor performer. You may think they're a poor performer. You may have communicated to them that they're a poor performer. Their colleagues think that they're a poor performer, but they're not telling their spouse at home that, you know, they're the worst person in the department. Okay, that they have the lowest productivity rating. That's not what they're telling themselves, and that's not what they're telling their loved ones. They're surrounded by a wall of rationalization about their performance. And, just as a kind of an anecdote, I was always amazed early in my career that when I would fire somebody and people would be surprised by it. You know, if you ever run into that, Doug, where you can't believe it, you thought, like, you've told an employee as clear as day that up or out, fix it or I'm going to get rid of you. And then when you do fire them, they're shocked that it actually occurred. Is that something you've run into, Doug?
I absolutely have seen it. And you walk away scratching your head going, didn't I talk to them? Didn't they hear me?
Exactly. You know, as managers, to be effective, we need to learn to break through this wall of rationalization that surrounds the employee. And it's just that simple. It's just that simple. That's our greatest challenge. That's our greatest challenge in getting the productivity out of people, is we've got to get through the wall of rationalization. So,
you know, I want to interrupt you for a second. One of the thoughts that I had after I finished the book and was sitting there going, okay, now what am I going to do with this? How would I apply this? Is the thought came to me that, you know, the next time I had an employee that I was going to have a conversation with them about their performance not being up to standards, why wouldn't I hand them this book and let them look at it from the perspective that a manager also looks at it? Would that help them to understand, to break through, as you put it, that barrier of rationalization?
I don't know. I really don't know, because, and I've thought about this, you know, very, very long and hard. And, I tell the anecdote in the book, but, you know, early in my entrepreneurial career, when I was in this company that was exploding in this growth, that won the Inc. magazine 38th fastest growing company, I was having problems getting my receptionist to answer the phone the way I wanted her to. I couldn't believe it. I was such an abject failure as a manager that I couldn't get, you know, this is a tech company, and why am I having a problem at my reception desk? How could this be? People tell themselves, they do the job they want to do, quite frankly, and they judge themselves against the job they think they have or they want to have. And it's a problem. And I think if you hand this book to that person, they'll look at other people in the organization. They won't see it as something that's in it, something for them. I'm jaded that way. I don't know, Doug.
I don't know. It it might be worth a try, you know. But
sure.
But I agree with you. It is the key issue number one when you've got underperforming employees is getting through to them that they are underperforming, and
yep.
Your script that you lay out in the book, your steps, your process, really is helpful in that area.
Thank you. It's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge. And I think that, you know, the script for terminating an employee, which, you know, kind of the third real big takeaway of the book is that these things don't need to be stressful, and they're all interrelated, okay, to a manager. If you're doing everything that you should be doing as a manager to try to break through that wall and communicate the employee not just what their performance is, but what they need to do, what the time frame in which they need to go turn the ship around here, you know, and what the ramifications are if they don't, you know, you've got no guilt in the process. And, you know, delaying the process is the only thing you might want to be guilty about. It doesn't have to be a stressful process because you're in the right. Don't question yourself about being in the right. So.
Well, you know, the experience I've had is CEOs and senior managers have this reputation of being hard-nosed, thoughtless people that are willing to just toss their employees onto the lumber pile and be done with them. And my experience is just the opposite. Almost invariably, they hold on to people too late, make too many excuses. And along the way, as a result of holding on to people too long, they send the wrong message. They send a message that
Yes. Even
though I'm telling you that you're not performing, it's okay. Is that what you found?
You know, I have a very good friend who always makes this great statement. In the history of business, you know, no manager or no executive have ever said that, you know, Bob, I shouldn't have fired him as soon as I did. I should have kept him a little bit longer. Nobody's ever said that. Okay, what people say is, oh, that wasn't so bad. Now that, you know, so-and-so is gone, we should have fired him last year. Okay, things are so much better. Nobody ever says, I wish I kept somebody longer. That doesn't occur. You know, that's one point about it. And I think the second point about it, which is more directly to your point, is that executives, managers, they're always going to be the bad guy. You know, you can't come out of this thing smelling like a rose no matter what you do, so don't even try. They have to protect their ego. No, they're going to go home from being fired, and they're going to tell their family, their significant other. They're not going to tell them the reality. They're going to tell them some version of the reality. They're not going to say is, well, 90 days ago, I had a sit-down meeting with my manager, and he made it really clear to me that my performance wasn't up to snuff. And he set, you know, clear objectives and measurements over this 90-day period, and I didn't meet them. So that's why I got fired. No, they're going to tell their significant other, you know, some story that's going to sound like, you know, injustice, okay, and that they got the short end of the stick, and that's because they, you know, they're being discriminated against, or they're not being appreciated, or they got blamed for somebody else's failures, or they're just unlucky.
I just had to laugh all the way through the section on the script that you suggest using when you fire somebody, because you suggest exactly what you were just talking about, what you were alluding to, is that you basically make it short and sweet, and you don't get into the why. If you've done this right, you've already had the meetings, you've already explained why. It's not going to make any difference at this point in time. You just tell them they're done and be gone. And you should have no guilt if you've followed the steps up to that point properly. And I just think that happens so seldom.
I think so. And it's, you know, people aren't confident, you know, and I use a phrase that was given to me by a friend of mine, is that, you know, your employees, they'll guilt lobby you. They'll lobby you with guilt. You get distracted by the emotional intensity of this. You've got somebody, you have someone crying in your office, you know, maybe a guy or something, you know, and it isn't easy. You know, you start to question whether you've made the right decision or not. And you've got to, what I would say to somebody is, first of all, if you're going to be a leader, lead. Okay, leaders, you know, make decisions, and that's what, you know, you're there for. okay, make this decision and make it made. Make it into the past tense. Don't make it with the employees sitting in the room with you. Okay, deliver the decision. Don't make it with them in the room.
Steve, have you had any negative feedback from this? Have you had people take a look at this book and say that they didn't agree or that it didn't work for them? Have you had anything other than positive feedback here?
I have, and it comes back to, I think, an important, you know, important realization that some people, and I don't mean this to sound like, a conceited remark, but, you know, we need to become better managers, okay? And if we're not a good manager, or if we're in a management position and we're not cut out for it, and, you know, I will be completely honest, I was thrust into, you know, an entrepreneurial management situation because sales were coming in. You know, we need to hire people. We need to go build this organization. You know, we didn't know what the hell we were doing. I mean, we didn't know what we were doing. We had to figure out some of this stuff and build, you know, management structures. I wasn't the best manager. I'm probably still not the best manager. So I've met people who take it a little bit personally that, you know, their method of nurturing and giving an employee, you know, 50 million chances is not the best approach in a holistic sense. You know, my response to that is, you know, if you're a manager, you're responsible to the owners of this company. Okay, your people are an asset, and you're responsible for asset management and efficiently using the assets of the company. Okay, whether it's trucks and computers as assets, whether it's people as assets, whether it's intellectual property as assets, you're a manager. You're supposed to manage assets of the company. You know, people used to say, you know, labor, materials, and capital, whatever. Nowadays, it's really everything is an asset. And you're really being asked to efficiently manage those assets. That's your job. And it's important that, you know, you take steps to do this as efficiently as possible for your management. And if you're not going to do it for your management, you have other motivations for doing it, you're really not doing your job. That's part of what, you know, what your performance plan is as a manager, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, there have been a couple of times when it's been a little bit heated, but people tend to come around. Certainly, their managers tend to come around, so.
Well, I just asked because my reaction to the book is extremely positive. I felt that you pointed out the obvious, which we tend to ignore. You gave equal emphasis to the steps that should be taken before you fire someone, equal emphasis with what you do when you fire them. And I thought that was really key, you know, because the firing is impossible to do without losing a lot of sleep if you haven't done the steps ahead of time.
That's exactly right. And the funny part was, you know, I started this thing out by writing up the script, okay? And then I realized that the script only works as far as, you know, reducing the stress of the manager when all these other things come before it. And then I sort of, you know, put it down and built the scaffolding around the script and filled in from there. That's exactly right.
That's funny. From the book, it's not obvious that you started at the back end and worked forward.
Good.
So that's interesting to know that. How would you recommend for business owners that they use this book? How would they get started?
Well, I think that business owners would benefit from reading this book. I really do, and I think that there are some immediate things that this book solves, which is you may have employees they just need to fire that you really, you know, that you can't fix. And sometimes, and I had an employee like this as well. I didn't address her performance issues. And by the time I was ready to address her performance issues, it was too late. It was too late because we had already established, you know, a behavior pattern where I was going to put up with her nonsense. It was very difficult for me to, you know, lay down a whole new law without a tremendous amount of resistance. So when you start managing like this, start managing for performance, there are going to be employees that are just not going to take the bait. They're not going to want to hear about their performance issues. They're not going to want to accept your evaluation of their performance. Okay, if they're denying your right, okay, to evaluate their performance, then you really have a non-starter. To your point, is that I think that the first couple of chapters and working with all your employees to put in place the right kinds of performance plans from the beginning or as soon as you start is really the first step.
You know, when you talk about that, there's one thing I sort of take exception with in your book, and that you sort of qualified it a couple of times, if I remember right, that you wrote this for companies with 100 or more employees. I just want to tell you that I work with a number of smaller companies, and I see no reason why this book doesn't apply. I just wouldn't exclude it because of the number of employees at all, whether you've got seven people or whether you've got 700. Was there a reason for that I'm missing?
The only reason I qualified it like that is I just felt that, where to begin? If I'm starting with a real entrepreneurial manager who's got five employees and, you know, and a truck and they're a roofer or something like that, that's what I was thinking in my mind, is that I need to take them through a management training that's more fundamental than this book provides. By saying that it's for larger enterprises, what I'm suggesting is that people who have roles in management have some management knowledge. They understand the game a little bit better. They understand the structures that need to take place and things like that. And that's what I was concerned about. I was concerned about making this a book for everybody and without it making it a more comprehensive book.
Okay, I can buy that. If I put it in my words, it's written more for the sophisticated or knowledgeable manager, not for the guy with the truck.
Exactly.
Okay, I buy that completely because I think you are presuming a level of management knowledge and a level of management skill to apply this.
Yeah.
What are some of the key questions that people ask you about how to handle underperforming employees?
Well, I get a lot of questions about where to start. I get a lot of questions about, you know, people who have a preconceived notion about if they're not working out, I got to fire them. I find people who have that point of view may need the book most, because they're sort of, you know, throwing up their hands at the problem rather than really trying to address it effectively. But I would say the question I get most often is sort of where to start and how do I deal with the person who's been on my staff for 5 years and has been nothing but a troublemaker for 5 years, but they have this piece of secret information about how the organization works. And if I fired them, I'd have to figure out somebody else who can train to do this one task. And it could be a financial task, or it could be a reconciliation, or it could be something as simple as, you know, how to run the software month close or something like that. But, you know, we can't be slaves to our employees, right? I mean, if we have employees that have a certain piece of information and they're holding it over us, we need to get out from underneath that, and we need to do that immediately. We can't be held hostage by our employees, that's for sure.
You know, one of the things that struck me as I read this is that so many companies have people that have been around a long time are not performing. The managers know they're not performing. They refuse to take action. And the book kind of really highlighted for me the reason why, because they've never really clearly spelled out what's expected and held people accountable. and gone through these steps ahead of time so that they could comfortably fire them?
You know, there's nothing like cleaning up a little bit of the mess, get everybody else's attention. Okay, if you've established by your actions, you know, a policy where certain behaviors are accepted or tolerated, it's very, very hard to get anybody to get particularly motivated, and people's performance will drift down to the level of what you accept, okay? And once you start cleaning up the mess in one corner, everybody's going to start to take notice. Everybody else is going to start to notice that, hey, wait a minute, the boss is now holding people accountable. Okay, the boss is actually saying we have to be here on time, and if we're not, you know, we're going to get fired or in trouble or suspended or what. And actually, when you consistently, you know, apply and do what you say you're going to do, people who work for you will take notice, and they will start to follow what you tell them. But if every time you make a statement about you've got to fix this up by February or things are, you know, going to get really tough for you and nothing really changes, everybody knows that you don't follow through what you're going to say, so that you say you're going to do.
You know, the as you talk about that, it reminds me of a personal experience. I wasn't the greatest, most knowledgeable parent in bringing up my kids. And I one time had a neighbor, after spending a weekend with the family, refer to me as the king of idle threats.
That hurts.
You know, and it was so true. And I think it's the same thing in business. It's these idle threats that I expect you to do this, but there's never any consequences when people don't. And whether you're dealing with employees or children, or training your dog, it all applies.
That is absolutely true. You know, and being known behind your back as the king of idle threats, you know, that's not a manager who's going to take their company, you know, to greater heights.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
That's not a company, that's not a manager who's going to, you know, who's, by the way, in a larger organization, is going to be recognized and promoted, because, you know, you're never going to have a high performance team. You're never going to have a high performance team if that's the way that you operate. Idle threats, you know, do not work, right? You know, parenting, I'm sure you learned, is about consistently applying the rules over and over again, you know, with fewer and fewer, you know, idle threats, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Why do you tell me now?
Sorry, I should have written this book years ago.
Well, let me ask you this. In working on this book and really focusing on this end of the employee, the manager-employee relationship, what did it bring to mind for you that might be used in hiring people? Anything?
You know, I've thought about that. I'm a big believer in employee testing. I think testing is, well, not perfect, can help you break through the smokescreen that employees will spread around during the interview process, prospective employees. I don't think that I've ever been, you know, a great hiring manager, to tell you the truth, because, you know, I think every manager has felt this way, is that it's a crapshoot. You know, you can be better at this or worse at this, but it's really hard to be perfect at it or very good at it. You always seem to be fooled at some level by an potential employee. I think the important part about it is when that employee's first day comes along, is that you set the very, very clear expectations, because we need to tackle the problem of this wall of rationalization as early in the process as possible. Okay, the longer that wall is up, the more difficult it's going to be to break down. Just as a point you were making before about the employees who've been around for 5 years, 10 years, you know, not performing well enough to ever be promoted and not performing bad enough to be fired, and they still keep a certain secret information or a certain relationship that makes it unpleasant to think about firing them, they stay around. We've got to stop that before it even starts. And I would like to, you know, I thought to myself that I would love to work with an organization that hires a lot of young people and use the ideas in this book to set a certain groundwork for the way that, you know, new employees and kids out of college and whatnot will be molded by their first experiences and how they're evaluated and what their expectations are.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because I think that is, if our audience goes away with nothing else, this is a key point. This is not just a book about how to fire people. You've addressed that. You do the best job I've seen about how to do it. But I think you set the stage for how do you manage people from day one. And I commend you for the book's ability to deal with the unpleasant back end, but transcend into, you want to never be here? Here's the kinds of things you should do from the very beginning.
And I think that the companies, you know, I my early career was at IBM and at Accenture, both organizations that sort of specialized in hiring, you know, kids right out of college and fitting them into the mold. So I spent 2 years, 3 years at IBM as a technologist, and then I went to Accenture, and I kind of like jumped in the middle of their program. I thought Accenture in particular was great at the cultural indoctrination that high performance really is. And, you know, if you don't know anything other than working hard and being accountable from the beginning, then you know what? That's the kind of employee you're going to be. I think it's particularly true today where the kids coming out of college, because of social issues and society and whatnot, they're much more of a blank slate now than, you know, kids coming out of college into the workforce 20 years ago. That's the good news and the bad news. You know, you hear a lot of people say,
yeah,
you know, the kids today, they have those expectations, et cetera, et cetera. They're blank slates. Kids are always blank slates coming out of college. You need to set firmly, you know, the culture of performance and accountability from day one. And that will change everything. That will change everything. And you'll get that kind of team, you know, coming up through the ranks. But you've got to do it that way. And you have to fight through this whole rationalization wall again, as I'm back to that phrase, where they have a view of the world that's completely different than yours. Well, you just can't let that start. You just can't let that start. You know, somebody's used an expression to me, is that, you know, you got to slay the dragons when they're young. That's the dragon you need to slay when it's young, okay, not when it's, you know, 50 feet tall.
Excellent point. Well, look, Stephen, we're running out of time here. Before we sign off, is there anything else you wanted to get across to the audience, anything I interrupted you on that you lost your train of thought that you want to cover now?
No, I appreciate your thoughtful comments. I've tried very hard to make this a advanced management tool, advanced management training tool. It's not for new managers per se. It could be integrated into a new management training leadership development program. But this is really a program for, you know, every manager, particularly those who've had the experience of trying to work with underperforming employees.
Yeah, and I think it is a great tool for the companies out there with a professional HR department that is maybe sometimes frustrated with trying to get these ideas across. This can be a great tool for them to use with managers as part of their training. So, well, look, how do people get in touch with you, learn more about the book? Learn, obviously, they should go buy the book. It's on Amazon.
It's on Amazon in hard copy. It's the various ebook formats, whether it's Kindle, Nook, on the iPhone, iTunes platform as well. And I've got a website called fixthemorfirethem.com, all mushed together. So fixthemorfirethem.com. You can reach me, links to purchasing the book, links to some training programs, public training programs that we've got scheduled throughout the country. Over 2014, I guess that's the year. Now it's 2014. Almost slipped on that. And we have a two-day advanced management workshop that we're doing as well. I think we're scheduled for Chicago, Philadelphia, and I believe one other city so far this year.
Okay. Stephen, thank you very much for being on the show, and thanks for adding a great book to my collection.
Great. Thanks so much.
All right. Have a good evening. Well, we've been listening to author Stephen Schar talk about his book, Fix Them or Fire Them. If you just tuned in, shame on you. This was a great, great conversation. Hey, you don't have to miss anything. Go buy the book. I really enjoyed it. It's not only going to sit here as part of my collection, but it's one of those books that I'm going to be giving a lot of people to read. So be sure to get to it. Well, hey, this is a great kickoff to a new year. Appreciate you listening in. We've got a full calendar of interesting guests and topics that we're going to be talking about. So I want to look forward to talking to you next week. I hope you enjoyed the show today. I hope the discussion, as always, has met our objective to provide you with new ideas and information that you can use to identify and achieve your goals right now. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the only show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug DeFeller.